Hello and welcome back to the first edition of Editing Aloud for the year 2018. After we left you, we had a rather interesting conference in Johannesburg of the African National Congress. We have a new leader of the party, Cyril Ramaphosa. We have the old president, Jacob Zuma, still the president. Nothing's happened to him. But there's a different sort of feel in the air at the moment. There are reports of the NPA actually investigating crime and even the possible arrest I heard this morning of a cabinet minister in Bloemfontein. And I was wondering, Sikonathi, if any of this could possibly be ascribed to the fact that Cyril Ramaphosa is now head of the party, given that the police and the NPA and all the people doing these investigations don't report to him. They report to ultimately President Jacob Zuma.
It absolutely does. Remember, there was someone that people reported to that person didn't want people doing their jobs in the crime investigation scene. So that person has now lost power, and a guy called Cyril Ramaphosa has got the power. And the professionals inside the police, inside the Hawks, inside the prosecution agency, those that have always wanted to do their jobs can now overlook that Sean the Sheep guy that has been blocking them, and that's exactly what's happening.
So you think that that in fact inside the Hawks, inside of the NPA, that sort of senior people are breaking loose of the actual hierarchy and saying, get out of our way, we're going to do our job, we're going to charge these people, and if you want to stop us, we will tell everybody.
Exactly, and we can even charge you with the obstruction of justice,
yeah,
and even treasonous, some treasonous charge.
So
the fact of the matter is now that Sean has lost political protection,
yeah,
and his mission there was never to prosecute, but was just to make sure that nobody prosecuted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Tim Cohen, there's an expectation for this weekend, because there are. The ANC, NEC meets again. Mm-hmm. It's having a lechutla. I don't know what it is that they talk about, policy, I suppose, or each other. There's an expectation that somebody will put their hand up and ask for the recall of President Zuma. How reasonable is that expectation? How reasonable are those? Is it a reasonable expectation?
It's a reasonable expectation that somebody will put up their hand.
Yeah.
There's no doubt about that, don't think. Whether it's a reasonable expectation that will be, successful, a completely different question. I think it's very delicately put. I think it's fascinating now to see what they do, because because it's, as we've said before on this program and elsewhere, Ramaphosa is not a... he's not a sharp mover. He likes to play the slow game. He likes things to happen in a kind of easy way. He's not a forceful kind of personality.
No.
But in this situation, if ever he needed to sort of gather up his strength and
get his act together.
Yeah, and put the
because
put the knife in the back, this is now,
yeah.
If he doesn't do it now, then he's in real trouble.
What's
and
that?
I think his authority will kind of seep away. All the stuff that Wasiko was talking about, all of the kind of new sheriff in town sort of assumptions that people are making, they'll stop making, so he's got to do it. And if he has to stand or fall in this moment.
And it's amazing how people pull behind the leader when the leader's there, and I think that's what we're seeing with the prosecuting authorities, who actually, some of these orders that they are now enforcing date back to late last year, before the ANC conference.
Yeah.
But now with the leader, sort of a new leader in place, they off they go. But I think...
But isn't it not interesting that they were put in place under a Zuma administration? And quite frankly, as I certainly was betting at the time, as I'm sure was Jacob Zuma, that Nkosazana would win in
but it's amazing how quickly,
sorry, we
weren't. You were betting.
Thank you.
True.
Yeah.
But I do think,
yourselves,
yeah, Peter, I think
you were right by that much.
It's not just the authority issue that is crucial. It's also that a lot of damage can be done in a very short time if he leaves Zuma in place.
Yeah.
I mean, already Zuma's landed them with this complete poison pill of the higher education funding, which they have to find in a budget which was already extremely constrained. And they're dealing with an Eskom which is really on the brink of imploding. And in a sense, Cyril, I would have thought, in terms of the economy alone, has no option but to get in there pretty fast and avoid any further damage being done.
You see, because my conversations with people who are reasonably close to the president go like this, that he doesn't think he needs to go, he doesn't think he's doing any damage, that he has behaved impeccably towards Cyril Ramaphosa since he became party leader. He's met with him, he's spoken with him, they have a working relationship going. He would be prepared, he wants to deliver a State of the Nation address, an open parliament. He wants it to be a speech that will leave its mark on South African politics. He sees the need for himself not to be the president by the time the next election is there, so he's prepared to consider something like an early election come around September. Okay? So what does that look like? How does that pan out in terms of if you were trying to finance that fantasy or that dream and you were his finance minister, Sikonati, where do you get the money to get through until September when Jacob Zuma then decides to call it quits and we have an early general election?
Look that what you've just said now about his plans and definitely what he wants happen would be the first time that the person that should have been fired 3-4 years ago decides on his own terms how he lives.
Yeah.
Jacob Zuma should not be able to deliver the State of the Nation address in Parliament. He is yesterday's man and he's caused enough damage, and the ANC is very well aware, hence they had been trying themselves to get rid of him. They're very well aware that each day he sits there as president, he costs the ANC directly electoral support. Fewer and fewer of them will go back to parliament after the election.
But if you look at the sort of metrics now, you've got, you know, there's a wind of change blowing over the country. People are more confident. Rand is strengthening. I'm not sure, Tim, we'll talk about the bond market. I don't know what's happening to the...
And none of that should be held hostage by Jacob Zuma staying on a day longer, a week longer than he should.
But in his own mind, things are looking just fine.
Oh, definitely. Mm. His own mind is very different to everything, to reality that everybody else sees. I'm sure he thinks he's the best president that has ever served the people of South Africa. The reality, however, is different. And he should not be there. Malusi Kigaba and Cyril Ramaphosa, and whoever, in fact, Malusi Kigaba should also not be there. Whoever is trying to get this economy going again will have a mammoth task if Jacob Zuma is still president. By the time Eskom must release its interim results, if it ever will, by the time the finance minister must present a budget, people will
when does, when is Tim, when is crunch day, or all three of you, when is crunch day for Eskom?
It was the end of December. The interim results, which were for the period to the end of September, should, according to the JSE's rules, have been published before the end of December, which they had initially promised.
Yeah.
They missed that deadline, and the JSE's now
When does it need to repay its debt?
We're not very clear, but certainly within the next couple of months there are big rollovers.
So it's months, not weeks.
Oh yeah, months. I mean, if they don't open their kind of financing with the banks by the end of March, they are in serious.
Okay.
I mean, serious so default Eskom, type trade
Eskom
problem.
Doesn't. So Eskom is not an issue this weekend. In other words, if Zuma is not recalled this weekend, Eskom survives because the banks will continue.
We don't know because
the opposite
will know better.
Say.
But we don't. Eskom has got liquidity problems, the extent of which we do not know. Whether it can still be paying suppliers and staff and so on is also in question. We simply don't know.
It has to service its coupon in March 1, but it has to pay salaries now. And Eskom itself says it doesn't have the money to be paying salaries and suppliers.
So
it doesn't have it now.
What I'm trying to get at is what can be decided this weekend? Okay, let's say the recall Jacob Zuma. How does that relieve ESCOM? Do the banks then come in and say, now that you've done that, we will, we can help?
What happens?
What sort of help does ESCOM need?
So the sequence that has to happen is that Jacob Zuma goes this weekend. The Cyril Ramaphosa takes over next week.
After
appoints,
Davos.
After Davos. Or appoints a new public enterprises minister and introduces a new kind of fiscal plan. Then the doors open. Then the bankers will roll over the loans.
New board.
If that doesn't happen, then everything's
and
in
the loans are so rolling. There's bonds out there which is one thing. Which are the coupons that you're talking about. Yeah. But there are loans that ESCOM uses to pay salaries.
But also the taps have simply been switched off domestically. The bankers won't lend to them. The bond market locally won't lend to them. So they're struggling to find cash locally, and that the local lenders have pinned that to governance.
So the people I talk to in the government, they need 2 weeks. Once Jacob Zuma is gone, they need 2 weeks to put in a board, because there's no board. That is not a board that's on there. So they need 2 weeks to put a minister and a board. And the condition of the lenders, local lenders, they've been begging these South African banks for at least 13 billion rand in an overdraft facility, and no one would give it to them until they have a board. So the people I talk to that are very close to Cyril Ramaphosa will put in a board at ESCOM, sort all the governance, at least those that can just be ticked off, like firing people, in 2 weeks. And then the banks will immediately chip in the required funds. And that will enable ESCOM to pay the coupons and then start collecting, raising more money in a bond. They need to do a $1 billion bond by the middle of March before they release their financial results.
Where would they go to for that? The market, open markets?
They go to the open markets.
International
markets, but they cannot go there with this kind of leadership they have now. They cannot go there with Lynn Brown, with Jacob Zuma, with Zathembe Khoza on. And that needs 2 weeks from the day Jacob Zuma goes to a day where they can have a proper board. And there are people that have been earmarked for these positions. You will see people like Jabu Mabuza coming in prominent, really prominent positions to prop up the major parts of the economy. And that's when things will get working. And that applies for South African Airways.
And is the budget delayed, or does Melusi Gigaba stay on as finance minister if Jacob Zuma were to
choice.
Go?
I would say if they succeed in getting rid of Jacob Zuma soon, then I would suspect there would be an enormous cabinet reshuffle. Almost every post will change.
No. Remember, the president lives with his cabinet.
Yeah. If they don't,
that's in the case of a vote of no confidence.
The constitution is that the president appoints the cabinet, and the president resigns, the cabinet is dissolved. There's a new president coming in. That president immediately appoints a cabinet. That's what's going to happen.
We'll carry on with this conversation in a moment. Welcome back. Panel, just back to our topic then. I mean, is Cyril Ramaphosa being too coy with Jacob Zuma? I mean, is he not confident of the support he has in the top six in the NEC? Why is he... What I understand that there is some short-term benefit in, quote, treating the sitting president with respect and not... pushing him out too violently, etc., etc., etc. But is this all part of a sort of a long game, or is he really quite frightened of what Zuma might be capable of?
Well, I think we're guessing here, to be honest. Yeah, but my guess is that he is assessing his strength. He doesn't exactly know, because the outcome of the ANC conference. Was so hard was it, you know, yeah. all of the factions got a little bit of the pie, you know, yeah. so now we ended up with a kind of bit of a mess. So now he has to try and work out exactly what his support is, you know, what his actual opposition mm-hmm. is. And I think you know, if they come out of this Lakhotla at the weekend with no decision, then I think we can say the ANC is like deeply riven by this issue and can't resolve it. And Ramaphosa's strength within the is not as much as we thought.
So it's this weekend.
Yeah, that, I would guess
the watershed.
Starting tomorrow on Thursday.
Yeah.
His approach really and the first topic on the agenda there is Jacob Zuma,
yeah.
and then there will be the election of the National Working Committee,
yeah.
which is the in committee of the National Executive
yeah.
Committee of about 26 people.
Yeah.
His approach really is to make sure that he gathers support, and you've seen the tone changing. People like Malusi Kikaba, people like Fikile Mbalula, singing his praises, and you needed to, with that kind of margin that he won with, you needed to get enough people, because these people were appointed and thank Jacob Zuma for his jobs as cabinet ministers. So you need to give have a working relationship that gives them some comfort that you're not just coming in with guns blazing.
Yeah.
So he's got that now behind him. And he stopped them discussing the matter for the January 8th statement.
Mm.
He's now got that behind him, and you can see there's quite a lot of support, certainly a lot more than what he got in December,
yeah.
and that's where that's the point but at which he can start acting.
Hillary, just answer me this. So it's now less than a month until the next budget, right? So can a minister take over the Treasury? Let's say Zuma goes and Malusi Gigaba, I think he would stay in the cabinet somewhere. I think Cyril would try and keep him on in some capacity, but maybe not at Treasury. Can a new finance minister just arrive and 3 weeks later deliver a credible budget?
Given Malusi Gigaba's performance the last time, anybody could do better than that, because the officials compile the numbers and write the review. The minister should be making the political decisions about what they're going to do about the fiscal challenges that they face. Now, we know that last time in October, Malusi Gigaba didn't make any decisions. He just let the numbers speak for themselves. So certainly the work is done by the officials, and probably a lot of it's already gone to print because it would have had to.
Mm.
And it is certainly theoretically possible for a new minister to take over not long before, as long as he or she is willing to work very, very hard to get properly briefed.
Yeah.
Remember, there's already this interministerial
yeah.
fiscal committee which is sitting, and the sort of budgetary decisions that really desperately need to be made have sort of gone up very much to presidential level. So
yeah.
so those decisions, presumably, we hope, are being made anyway at a political
yeah.
level, and there's no reason
yeah.
why you couldn't put in a new minister. Even
and there's
that would
a budget
be
committee that puts
and
all of this
committee.
Together.
And is
yes.
there is there a finance minister staring us in the face who we don't already know about? I mean, Pravin Gordhan surely can't do it again.
He's been speculated about the Department of Public Enterprises.
Well, he'd have a great deal of fun doing that.
We have to appreciate the fact that this cannot be just business as usual, in which case then you need, again, a trusted hand with some credibility. Just for the next 18 months.
Who's there?
He's obvious. He's there. He's been there. He's been finance minister twice now.
Yeah.
That's Pravin Gordhan. Mm. You need someone to stabilize the ship and point it in the right direction. Now, with proper authority at the top as president, you just need that person for about 18 months. Pravin
yeah.
Gordhan is ready to retire. He didn't want to go back to parliament, but they had a project to do.
Yeah.
Now, that project is just for the next 18 months. You need someone like that, and then you can have your
yeah.
Zoyim Mkhize as finance minister
yeah.
in 2019.
I'm uncomfortable talking in the realms of sort of fiction. Because we imagine that all this is going to happen, and I'd rather wait. I think probably that's my own fault for asking the questions until we know for sure.
Any delay in the budget would
yeah.
be a terrible signal. It's been on the 3rd of Wednesday of February for as long as anyone
yeah.
remembers.
There will be no delay.
I mean, this is crucial for bond markets
and
South Africa generally.
On the economy generally, Hillary, the Monetary Policy Committee of the Reserve Bank is meeting today. What are they going to do?
I would have thought they would hold,
yeah.
but as always, we're looking very much to what they say, not just what they do. And I think they are going to set the tone for monetary policy this year and give us their take on the economy. I would have thought from their point of view, given with a budget coming up with uncertainty, as we've spoken about who's in charge for the foreseeable, there's too much riding on it to take the risk of cutting. So while the inflation is going to look better, probably. This is not the time I would have thought to move,
but it will be sort of very education,
and the rand
puts pressure on.
Because the rand is
where do they want the rand to be? I mean, does anyone?
They don't know. They don't manage the rand. But the rand is 10% stronger now than it was. Yeah. More than 10% stronger now than it was when they last met. So the outlook for inflation, starting out of this year, really improves.
Yeah.
But whether the rand will hold, we still facing a Moody's downgrade and a capital outflows. We're facing all sorts of political uncertainties and indeed global uncertainties which could weaken the rand, and it doesn't seem the time to take
is
a
Davos place. Going to be at all interesting? I mean, I know Donald Trump is going to. You've been to Davos before.
And I'm going this year.
Going
I'm going again.
Donald Trump meets Cyril Ramaphosa. Do you think he'll?
I don't know. I'd be extraordinarily interested to see whether or not whether Donald Trump wants to meet African leaders or thinks that there's and even if he does, whether they'll meet him.
What shithole do you run out?
I would think that the American State Department would absolutely love to get him together with Cyril Ramaphosa on a platform somewhere, and I'm sure that Cyril Ramaphosa would absolutely not want to be there.
There'll be a lot of heading for cover.
Well, but maybe Trump doesn't want to. Maybe he doesn't care. You know, maybe he doesn't. That's not what he's interested in. I mean, it's very interesting that he should be going to Davos. He's the candidate of America First. You know, he's the candidate against global trade.
And now Xi Jinping went last year.
So I think it's a deep case of FOMO. You know, that this is this is the reason why he's going. It has nothing to do with, you know, kind of any policy sort of issue. It's it's weird that he should even want to go, given his notional.
But there's no chance, Hillary, that Team South Africa under Cyril will make any sort of. There are no surprises we're expecting out of our delegation to Davos.
Well, I think Cyril does go. He went last year as the leader.
He's going to get asked questions by a whole...
He goes as the president in waiting. So I think that gives him a stature in a Davos context to talk to investors, which he certainly wouldn't have had if the ANC election had gone the other way.
And if something happens this weekend and he goes to Davos, people just... He'll have no time to himself at all. I mean, it would be a complete scrum if he was in the process of changing governments while he was in Switzerland and not in South Africa.
No, I mean, I'm sure I'm sure people are going to be falling over themselves to meet and greet and to. He's the new.
Talking about falling over themselves.
You guys will be surprised, though, Tim. He's going to go in there and meet Donald Trump and invite him to come hunt at his game farm in the shithole in South Africa. And that's
and
where
it will be very constructive.
It will be a very constructive discussion, and then a lot of investments will follow Donald Trump coming to hunt some buffalo in Cyril's farm, and you'll see what happens thereafter.
And because nobody else is talking to Trump, I mean, Macron. Theresa May is going to be a bit wary.
And
he's
a businessman. This time he will avoid having Michael Bloomberg introduce him to Donald Trump, but he'll have someone else. And you'll see what happens. American investment flowing in, starting at the farm.
the contingent advantages of Cyril Ramaphosa.
Yeah.
Nobody's taken account of.
As we come towards the end, Tim Cohn, you've got a new theory about world bond markets, and it's not quite we're all going to die, but world bond markets are at a tipping point, as you were explaining earlier. and as you'll obviously flesh out in great detail but somebody's called a bear market in bond markets. What does that mean, and why should we worry about it?
Well, I mean, it is an extraordinary thing. I mean, if you look at the graph of bond yields since around about 1988. They have gone, steadily downwards.
Right.
So 1988.
Because they go, that's the inverse of the price, right?
Correct. Yeah. So, so basically, it's been there's been a bull market in bonds for 30
bonds,
40 years.
Bonds generally, right?
Bonds generally. So the key marker is the U.S. 10-year Treasury, and that's the one that is the sort of guides the globe in a way.
Yeah.
But interest rates have gone down in South Africa too. People forget they've been. In the last couple of years, they've gone up, but in 1994 they were there was that 1998. What was it, Hillary? I think it was 22 or something like that. For very brief periods. But anyway, the local trend has been down too. So now the idea is, and this is not my idea, that the U.S. Treasury yield has gone above 2.5% for the first time.
Ever.
For a long time.
Yeah.
And the trend might be heading the other way.
And what does that mean?
It's not good for us.
Not good for anyone.
not good for emerging markets.
Not good for emerging markets.
Because?
Not good for
bondholders. Why would people buy our bonds for the yield if the yield is decent?
If the dollar yield is, ours would just have to be higher, presumably.
Correct.
And what happens to your interest rates when your yields rise? Do they rise as well?
Yeah, for consumers, they usually think about it in terms of their own housing mortgages. Those will go up too in most circumstances. And that means more money comes out of the consumer economy.
And for governments, for 2018, this particular outlook is very bearish.
Correct.
For higher interest rates around the world.
Correct.
Lower bond
from
prices
from a very low base.
From a very low base
across the world.
Right.
What we don't want here is those higher interest rates. Here, in fact, we want to be going the other way, which again has got that problem that Hillary was talking about. It narrows the spread or the yield for those people that rather stay home than come here for a lower interest rate. But that's where we're going.
Thank you for joining us. Good to see you again. I hope you had a good break. We'll see you again next week.